rebound. Shoots it, deflected right in. Peter Angel save rebound. Nasty stop by Peter Angel. I don't believe that save. Neither does Peter Nasty. He can't believe the save that Peter Angel just made on him as Frankie sparkling on that maneuver there to stop and rob Peter Nasty. He should get 5-10 for that.
Hello and welcome to episode 85 of Tendy Talk, presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the BLPA Podcast Networks. I am your host, Joe, better known as Washed Up Goalie on social media. This week, I chat with gold medal winning Paralympian Team USA goalie Jen Lee. Some of you may have heard of Jen when someone stole his medals right out of his car before having a change of heart in returning them. So, without further ado, let's get to the conversation with Jen. Well, Jen, thanks for joining me on the podcast. I'm actually pretty excited to get you on here. One of my goals with the podcast is to talk to goalies of all ages and skill levels, but that also means not just, you know, male able-bodied goalies. So I've been really focusing this year on having, you know, more female goalies. And then I was really excited to get you on because you are, unlike any other goalie I've had on the podcast, you are a sled hockey goalie, which is really awesome. And not only that, but you are a U.S. gold medal winning sled hockey goalie, which is even cooler for me.
Oh, no. Thank you, Joe, for having me on the show. But yeah, it just, you know, like you said, you know, I play a goalie. Goaltending is my position as well, except mine's just going to be a little bit different. You know, it's para ice hockey now they call it these days, or sled hockey. But the concept's still the same, right? The net, the size doesn't change. The rink, the ice rink sizes doesn't change at all either. So the game's still the same, except we're just finding different ways to stop a puck, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Now, before we get into, like, the whole sled hockey side of things, you play sled hockey because you lost your leg. So before we learn about that, were you into hockey before the accident, or was it something you discovered after the accident as, you know, a way to stay active?
Yeah, no, I actually grew up playing hockey as well. Just not like college level or even high school level. West Coast, I grew up in the West Coast, a little background. My family and I immigrated from Taiwan, you know. So we grew up in California, San Francisco, Bay Area. And it was like roller and inline hockey became bigger in the 90s. Because I think to me, Mighty Ducks. I watched the Mighty Ducks and I got into hockey because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Well, and then, I mean, out in California, we had pro beach hockey at that time with that crazy ramp behind the net. Right. ESPN's missing a chance to bring that back and, you know,
make some money there.
Yeah.
I know. You can at least put – they can definitely at least put down the Ocho, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how cool was it too? Because, I mean, they had it on the beach and you got these people walking down. I'm assuming it was probably Venice Beach or something. And then, okay, you got this game going on.
Right.
It should be part of the Summer X Games at least.
Yeah, and the vibe is just so great. And you see, like, amazing footwork, too, by inline roller hockey players.
You know?
And I think a lot of people who – I mean, hockey – in the hockey world, right, people know that. But, like, and if you're looking at the bigger round, you know, people doesn't know sometimes that, hey, you actually transition easier or better to ice hockey as an inline roller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was funny when I was in high school. Every day after school, a bunch of my teammates and I, we would meet up at the little grade school right next to our high school because they had a beautiful blacktop parking lot. And we would play roller hockey until the sun went down or we had hockey practice. And our coach would just get so mad. He's like, you guys are playing too much damn roller hockey because your turns just take forever. You know, because that is the one thing with roller hockey is you can't make the tight turn like you can on ice. And he's like, it's ruining the way you guys skate. And we're like, oh, Jesus, no. But yeah, so – you know, like you said, you're growing up in California in the 90s. We had the Mighty Ducks. You had Gretzky out in L.A. But hockey was still quite a niche sport. So how did you discover it? Was it really just the movie and you're like, I want to try this out?
Yeah, that's a good question. Definitely, it wasn't just a movie, right? It has a little bit of everybody kind of played a role. It definitely was during around the summertime, and parking rec and stuff like that. There's always like activities going around, you know, going on after school or summer school around that time. And yeah, and then I just saw, I remember watching a bunch of kids just playing, you know, stick ball, you know, in a way they're playing in the schoolyard, playing roller. And then next thing you know, like the crowds got bigger and bigger. And then you, every time you walk by, you know, the after school and you see that, you kind of just draw it into that. So really, that's really kind of like my initial. And then a guy named Richard Solomon, where, he is actually more of like a hockey fanatic and whatnot. He was the kid that really kind of got me into the, and playing hockey and everything else. And afterwards, it was like goaltending was a position that I just like realized I wasn't good at skating. And then, you know, they were like, we're just going to put you in front of the net. You know, there's always like a, you know, there's the goalie position is always open, right? It's always, there's something available for that.
So you're playing, you know, street hockey essentially in the 90s. I'm going to guess you probably wore those glorious Mylek leg pads that we all had that left the toes open. So,
oh yeah, totally.
You know, it'd probably be okay for you now because on your one foot, you got probably titanium toes and you wouldn't feel it anymore. But it's like, God, I just remember coming home with, you know, bruised up toes. It's like, what am I doing to myself?
Oh yeah, totally. Those were like Big Five Sporting Goods, you know, like brand too, you know, the one that comes like in a box and then everything is compacted down. And then here comes the free, you know, the set, right? The blocker, catcher.
Yeah.
Whatnot. Yeah. So I remember just wearing those things. And then sometimes even mixed with like baseball equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very, very much like Sandlot on with stick and puck or, you know, stick and ball.
That's exactly what it was. And I mean, there was just something about that era of the 90s. Because you had the Mighty Ducks come out, and then you had that wonderful movie Wayne's World with, you know, they're playing street hockey and game off, game on. And it was just like, that was the vibe, not just in California. I was in Chicago. We had the same vibe. Totally. It was like, you'd go to by the park, and for whatever reason, the tennis courts never had nets. So this roller hockey players just took over the tennis courts. Beautiful, flat paved area, and then you got the chain link all around, so you don't have to go chasing the ball when it's out of play. It was just like, and like you said, you go by one day and there's, you know, six kids out there. The next day there's 10 kids, and then before you know it, you got enough for 2-3 teams, and you're just taking turns. And
yeah, no, totally. It's definitely like definitely there was a lot of pickup games happening at the tennis courts. Yeah, because it was just the only place that's kind of like available unless you go to the basketball court. But like you go to the basketball court, it would be taken over by noon, right? Because there are actually going to be more people playing over there on the basketball
court.
So yeah, I have some good memories back what you just said. Yeah.
Totally. I remember growing up, we had paved alleys in Chicago, but there was like this groove right in the middle of the alley for drainage. And so we would play in the alley by my buddy's house. And right behind his house was actually a funeral home. And they had this great, big, beautiful, brand new paved blacktop parking lot. And the one day the mortician came on, he's like, why are you guys playing in the alley? Why aren't you playing in the parking lot? And we're like, well, it's not ours. And he's like, well, as long as we don't have services going on, you're welcome to use the parking lot. And it was great because there was a brick wall on the one side. So that's what we're shooting against. And we're like, this is awesome. And it's just, but the problem was like this time of summer, he'd be working in the embalming room and he would crack a door open to get a nice breeze in.
Right.
Every now and then the ball would wind up in the embalming room. And then everybody's looking at each other like, I'm not going to get it. So it's like playing, you know, rock, paper, scissor to figure out who's going to get it. And every once in a while, you'd hear kind of a chuckle because he noticed the ball was in there, and then it would just kind of come rolling out of the embalming room. We always brought an extra street hockey ball or two just in case one went in there because nobody wanted to knock on the door and maybe see something because of that. So you discover the game, you know, on pavement. When did you transfer over onto ice? Was it after the accident or was it beforehand where you said, you know, let's try this ice thing.
Yeah, no, totally. So it was my first time after I was injured in 2009. And when I got transferred to a rehabilitation center here in San Antonio, Texas, it's like a military rehab facility for people with permanent injuries, physical injuries, you know, like myself, amputee. It was like the therapeutic sport, para ice hockey or sled hockey was, you know, introduced to us and asked if we would like to participate, but it was like an all-night sport. And that itself was totally brand new to me. I had no idea how even that concept worked.
Yeah. So let's talk about the accident. So even before the accident, you decided to sign up for our military and serve our country, which is just awesome. What branch were you in, by the way?
Army, U.S. Army.
Okay, very cool. Good friends of ours, their son, he's in the Army. He's finishing college this year, and then he'll be active duty infantry.
Oh,
he was,
cool.
And my nephew is currently in, I think he's in week 3 or week 4 boot camp at Great Lakes for the Navy. So
the Navy, yeah. That's Great Lakes.
It was really funny because my nephew came over the night before he was going off to boot camp and, you know, give us some hugs and everything. And he's like, well, I got to leave. I got to go to my mom's house. And we're like, oh, that's nice. He's like, no, I need her to clip my fingernails. And we kind of looked at him and we're like, you're 18 years old. He's like, well, I can clip them. She just does a really nice job. And we're like, that's sweet on one end, but like, you're going to boot camp tomorrow. You cannot say things like that anymore, buddy. And he's like, I know.
Right. Being in the last month, you know, the parents' love and all that before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. No, I hear you.
No.
Sorry, Joe. I got the volume. I all of a sudden I lost the volume. I don't know why. I apologize. Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, it doesn't. Can you hear me? Okay, that's fine. Oh, there we go. It's back. Yeah. All of a sudden, I just lost audio. I was like, "What happened?" Yeah. Sorry about that.
On my end, my mic every now and then it's pretty finicky, and if I just tap it, the cord comes out.
No worries.
Yeah, but for my nephew, because of COVID restrictions, they only get 4 tickets to the graduation right now. His parents are divorced, so obviously they're each going to come, and grandparents should be there before us on top of that. So we said, all right, we'll come down to Chicago graduation weekend, and after the graduation, we're going to take you out for dinner. And he's like, all right, I'm down for that.
Nice.
But so you join the military, you're serving our country. And I think some people listening, they hear, you know, you're an amputee and they're probably thinking, you know, was it combat? But in my reading, it was a motorcycle accident, correct?
Yeah, it was. It was a motorcycle accident back in 2009. I was stationed in Savannah, Georgia at that time. But then my accident happened in Florida, Jacksonville, Florida, where I was riding back with 4 of my other colleague or other motorcycle buddies. Yeah, that was also in the military with me.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting you say that, you know, you were on leave and it happened because I was talking to our friend whose son is in the Army. He was a 20-year Navy carrier pilot. And he said, you know, most of the injuries he saw of his colleagues through his 20 years was while they were on leave, not in combat. It's just kind of crazy how that happens, you know, but you get in the accident, you lose the leg. At that point, I mean, what are you thinking, you know, of what the future holds for you at that point?
Yeah, totally. Like very, very great point you brought up earlier. Just, you know, where your buddy says he saw more leave accident or, you know, like not in the combat and stuff like that. Because I think the statistics at that time coming back from downrange, we call it downrange, like a combat theater, right? Or like a deployment trip, you know, I think it's like every one out of five return will, you know, just get an accident or something, but most likely a motorcycle. So the statistic was definitely like similar to what your buddy's saying. Hey, I see more like vehicular accident and all that stuff. So again, like circle back for sure. You know, it was just a typical Saturday riding, you know, where five of us like to ride, and we have ridden before in different places or to different city. I think we have ridden to South Carolina as well and Helton Head and whatnot. So, you know, when the accident happened, definitely was something that was just, you know, basic questions I asked myself, could I even walk again? Can I even run again? Can I continue to serve my country? You know, and those things were definitely, you know, was playing around, and I was wondering, hey, if this is even possible. So, right. In a way, I call it one chapter closed, open with another, but I had no idea what that chapter was going to look like in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, my grandfather, later on in life, he had hardening of the arteries, and he wound up having both legs amputated just below the knee, not at the same time. So when he was going in to have his second one amputated, he made us take his prosthetic and hold on to it in the waiting room. And we're a family that, you know, has dark humor. So my uncle set it on the coffee table because this waiting room, like, you had to walk it to get to most places in the hospital. So he sets it on the coffee table with the lampshade on top, like in a Christmas story. So that got a lot of looks. Because, of course, I believe it was around Christmas time, too. So that was funny. But then after the surgery and they transfer him to the rehab facility, the nurse comes in, and this poor guy didn't know what he was in for. The nurse looks at my grandpa. He goes, you know, we like to set goals for what you want to do when you leave the rehab facility. You know, do you have any heavy thought of any? And my grandpa, he's sitting there, thinks for a minute. He goes, you know, I always wanted to be a jockey, but I was too tall. But I suppose I meet the height requirement now. And this poor nurse just like looking around at all of us like, what do I do? And we're like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, Grandpa.
Got it.
You know, his thing was, you know, I can sit here and feel sorry for myself, or I can face it with humor and accept it and move forward and learn how to move on. And that's what he did.
Yeah, totally. I think everyone has a different way of how they see it, how they handle, you know, with these type of traumatic events or situation. But for me, luckily I have, you know, and like you said, it's sense of humor is a huge thing, especially I think in the military where I think we were pretty open or have a thicker skin or just more blunt about certain things, you know? So I have like witnessed, you know, my fellow amputee who I rehab alongside with, like where they ended up like drinking out of it, you know, their prosthetic leg, you know, they have beer pouring a socket. And that's so cool, right? But then like, then you see other people got into it at a bar somewhere and everybody jump on the bandwagon and start drinking out of their leg. And that to me, I'm like, I don't know if I've ever drinking out of anyone's leg or a man's leg, but that's so cool, you know?
own maybe, but not somebody else's.
Even maybe, like my sock is a little bit pretty high up to the groin area, but like, you know, like I may have to do a little wipes or something, a little sanitizer, right? But totally, but it definitely had to take, like you mentioned, you know, one of those like, hey, are you going to continue to make excuses or feel sorry for yourself, you know, where, and I don't think anyone can take that away from it, right? Where it's like, hey, if you do lose a leg and you may just feel that way and no one can understand you. And it is, you're totally right. Because I remember there were times at the beginning when I lost my leg where I have an able body where it's like missing two legs, or they'd be like, oh, you're going to be okay. Or, oh, you know, things, you know, like just these encouraging things. I'm like, what do you know? You know, like you don't miss your leg, you know, but and it just took some of that understanding, but definitely was really helped as well where I rehab alongside with the guys who came back from combat theater, like, you know, Marines, Army guys. There were special operators as well that was there, different men and women service members that really put their harm in the way at the front line, came back and tried to go back to continue to kick doors after they're injured heavily, you know?
Yeah. I remember my grandpa, his biggest thing was he would complain that his toes still itched.
Oh, Panda Pan.
Yeah, he would get that all the time. Mm-hmm. And my mom would go to his prosthetic leg and scratch his toes. He goes, oddly, it feels mm-hmm. better.
It's crazy about that is like someone told me, and I didn't believe it, but they're like, if you actually had your leg amputated today and you had no knowledge what a phantom pain or if that doesn't like instill in your brain or imprint in your brain, you actually wouldn't have the pain or the itch. Yeah, but once it tells you psychologically, then it's almost like, oh my God, now I do feel like there's an itch or my leg is twisted or however. Yeah. Crazy.
So, you know, post accident at the rehab mm-hmm. facility, they bring up sled hockey to you. I've seen the videos where they bring NHL guys out there in the sleds and it doesn't go well for them. What was it like that first time they put you in the sled? You're out there, I can't even use the term like a deer learning how to walk, but you know, kind of the same thing. You're just kind of all over that first time on the ice.
Yeah.
What were you thinking? Or did it just like, was it like the first time I skated where I'm like, I suck at this, but this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I still remember it like it was yesterday. You know, the program was definitely the sled hockey program that was offered. It was introduced initially by Operation Comfort, which is a local nonprofit organization that helps injured and wounded service members here locally. And they brought it up to the military facility at the Center for the Intrepid. And when they told me to go over there and just to try it out, first time on the local ice rink. First of all, I was like, there's ice rink in San Antonio. It's like Texas. It's like 100 degrees. Like, you know, like I was just thinking like, maybe this is a joke. Maybe they're just like, hey, like the visual, you're on the ice, but you're actually not, you know? And then, and I actually went, there was an actual ice rink, Northwoods Ice Hockey Center, Ice and Golf Center. And yeah, I was really over, I think just being able to play hockey again gave me that sense of like that goosebumps or that excitement as well, because it's been a while. You know, I haven't touched the gears or involved in anything that still has to do with hockey since like high school in a way. And then I joined the service. So when I got on the ice for the first time, it just felt great. It just felt so free. And then I think that's the word I can describe, because the first time where you may be limited from running, you may be limited from all of your mobility because your physical injuries, right? When you're on the ice, you're just colliding and you're just feeling that little chill, that wind. You just knew that kind of felt really good. You know, you wasn't sure how the whole thing would play out. But then, you know, that enjoyment did only last about 2 seconds, because nearly I just tipped over and I fell. You know what I mean? I'm just like, oh my goodness, and bam. So I was like, what is this? You know, how is this possible? And then you just realized that this is actually going to be a very challenging, a tough sport to either start or stay on, you know, if you have the patience.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. And
football fans, the first Sunday of the NFL season is here. And DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is giving new customers a can't-miss offer to celebrate the return of the NFL. Right now, new customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. And as an added bonus for week one, everyone can experience the thrill of DraftKings early win promotion. It's simple. Bet on an NFL team to win. If your team leads by 10 at any point during the game, you get paid instantly, even if your team loses. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN to get $200 in free bets instantly when you place a $5 bet this Sunday. That's code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
The other thing in warrior teams they're kind of exploding in the game of hockey, these warrior teams for veterans. In fact, there was one in our beer league 2-3 years ago, and they had a guy on the team. We didn't know at the time he was skating with a prosthetic leg. You wouldn't know by his stride. It wasn't until after the game that he's got his hockey hockey bag and his prosthetic leg over his shoulder walking out into the parking lot. And they're like, man, he's better than some of our guys. But the one thing I've heard from a lot of the guys that I've talked to that are on these Warrior teams is it's not just about playing the game and having that outlet to play. It's the locker room for a lot of, you know, these vets that play on these teams to, you know, especially for like yourself, it's you've all, for the most part, whether it's a physical or emotional trauma that you've experienced, there's only a certain group of people that are going to understand that. And they're in that locker room with you. And, you know, in a way, it's one of the few places you guys can really be your authentic selves.
Yeah, no, totally 100%. Because, you know, as you mentioned, the other service member in that locker room is a huge thing. And you're talking about camaraderie, you know, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that word right, but camaraderie is like the biggest thing. And it's, you know, the military cohesiveness and the cohesion. And it kind of brings you back that sense of like, hey, you're back with your units, you're back with your brothers and sisters, you know, because in a way, like now you have other different branches of service all in one locker room. And my teammates, Rico, can like say it the best. It's like everybody started bashing on each other. You know, you got like Marines making fun of the Army, but then we're both making fun of the Air Force. Like, you know, like just different, like the toughness of it and what they did in the military and how bad like the Navies are and all these things. And it just like that continue, you know, like the trash talk, the chirp in the locker room, it definitely was like Maggie Field that, you know, back and back, hey, you're back with those guys, you know? Yeah, for sure.
So you play on the U.S. team. How many of those guys on the team are veterans?
Yeah, the numbers will go up and down. You know, I think when we try out at the team, when we try out for the national team back in the 2010-2011 season, the guys that made it was myself. The guys that made it that was from the military, in a way, were a veteran, was myself, Rico Roman, and Paul Schaus, you know. Mm-hmm. That was three, and, you know, me and Rico was Army and Paul Schaus was a U.S. Marine. And more and more later on, it kind of just added. We had, and then just the guys try out and then just able to, you know, get a roster or get selected. And then you were looking at as high as like about six or seven close to it at one season, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a mixed number per season or every time or every 4 years, you know what so. But I say it's still really great to see that because, you know, you know, here I was rehabbing alongside, like, with Joshua Sweeney, you know, Rico Roman or Luke McDermott, you know, like, Ralph de Quebec was from Walter Reed. You know, those are the guys that I kind of mentioned. They were, like, you know, was on the, you know, was current or former Paralympic guys on the team, you know, that was Marines and Air Force, Army guys, you know. So, yeah.
Well, and as I look at it, it's just, it's this really cool phase for you guys because you went from – defending our country, now you're representing our country on the national stage and, you know, continuing to make us proud.
No, thank you. It's definitely in a way, my teammates, you know, the way they describe it the best, you know, they say it's a different way to represent your country.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Where we definitely has, you know, a lot of us still had a lot of fight in us, right? And especially for me, where, you know, I definitely wanted to stay in the military, but then I knew kind of way, you know, my fight may be over as far as like, you know, did, you know, deploy me again back down range to Iraq, Afghanistan, or wherever we were at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now the enemy is the Canadians.
The enemy is the Canadians and sometimes the puck itself where you couldn't even try to handle
yes.
over us. You know?
Yeah. So let's talk about actually playing goalie in sled hockey. And my son asked me this question, and it's like, you know, I don't have an answer to it. You know, you only wear one leg pad. So his question was, do you have to buy the set, or is there like a special program where you can get the one leg pad? How does that work for you?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Trust me. I tried. I tried to be like, hey, do you do 50% discount? You know, I'll just take the right leg pad. You know, I try to go to the, what's the one that's like a used equipment? I forgot what it's called. They have
Play It Against Sports.
Yeah, Play Against Sports. I'm like, I just want one pad. They're like, you got it. You know? So, no, so you have to pick, you got to buy the whole set. But I do use only one leg pad. But you have goalies who have the preference to wear two, to wear both mm-hmm. if you want to. I know the the Russian goalies has worn too before, the Czech goalies as well. They're just different style, however. And then there's also Steve Cash, you know, with my a former teammate, Steve, where Steve doesn't even wear it. And I started actually not wearing a leg pad either because he was wearing a shin guards. He was wearing mm-hmm. his shin pads and a sock over. And, you know, the guy's about 5'7", and he is stopping pucks, like, left and right. You know what I mean? Like, we call him the Purple Cobras, you know?
You know, and you had mentioned earlier that, you know, you guys still play with the regulation 4x6 net. Right. I'm sitting here going, okay, I'm an able-bodied goalie, and I still leave an awful lot of net behind me. If I'm now essentially sitting down in a sled playing, there's a lot of net above me. So, you know, how good are some of these guys at lifting that puck up and over you to where that does become a concern? Or is it really, you know, yeah, the net's 4 feet high, but you really only have to focus on maybe the top 2 or 3 feet?
No, I mean, it's, you know, if you ask me the same question like 10 years ago, Joe, like, I would say, hey, you know, you get the gist of like how the player is going to shoot, where they want to place the puck, and how maybe fancy they want it to finish and look great for the goal, you know, Kodak and all that. But now you're looking, you know, now the game has evolved so much where now they're able to use right hand to left hand while switch back, right? Because we're in our sport, we have two sticks instead of one, and we're, you know, the shot placement are getting even more accurate. The shots are coming at you a little bit, you know, more harder, faster, heavier. Yeah, and then you got guys, you know, you got guys like Declan Farmer, where he can go up and down, you know, where he can shoot you wherever, like, you leave a little, just a tiny little gap in your hole anywhere, and things like that. So, you know, I would say it is definitely difficult for us to really understand, like, if you're just a new beginner of this sport and you have, like, someone who can play like Declan Farmer, or, you know, you're talking about Tyler McGregor in Canada, you know, those great, skillful, elite guys, then it's so hard. It will be hard. It will be tough to stop them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, part of me thinks it'd be fun to see, you know, one of these elite national teams play against your average beer league team to see, you know, how well would that go for the beer leaguers? I have a feeling it'd be a pretty, pretty good game.
Well, believe it or not, so, you know, before we go to camp for our, you know, before we get together as a national team, or even before we even make the national team, we play with our club team, right? So, mentioned about the San Antonio. So, we have a club team. The San Antonio is just like an all military veteran team, right? But you have teams like St. Louis, you got teams like Colorado, you know, you got teams in the East Coast where they're consist of like different athletes from, like, you know, born with disabilities and military mixture. But at the same time, just like our club team, we have national team too that plays. Mm-hmm. So in a way, we're playing with our guys who, you know, maybe veteran guys, but who are not just like as high level, but they're still great enough to, like, hey, we can play a good club game or close to a development team level game. And oh man, it's just like it's so much fun out there though, you know, because you're just, it's a totally different dynamic hockey, but it's still
cool. Well, one of the first times I saw sled hockey was up here at the Super Rink in Minnesota. They have the Hendrickson Foundation. And they have a celebration every summer, and it's just all kinds of they use the term adaptive hockey because there's blind hockey. They got some of the deaf teams that I know Sam Makita is very instrumental in, and it all culminates with a celebrity game. So you get a lot of local retired NHLers, Olympians, you know, the Broughton brothers are typically there. But it's really cool because, you know, it's just free, open to the public. And I took my son 2 years ago and, you know, we sat around and watched some of these games. You know, you had, you know, the ones where they're just kids, where they're some were getting pushed around. But then you had these warrior teams out there and they were knocking into each other like none other. It's like, whoo, it is brutal out there. It was so fun to watch, though.
Yeah, some good stuff for sure. I think a lot of time, a lot of guys who pick the sport up, at least from the military perspective, is like they want to hit. You know, they feel like the ball on ice in a way, or just want to let go of their aggression, you know, wherever it's going on. Yeah, you know, so I think that's like really just a great way. And then once you start picking up like a little bit of hockey, it just becomes like so much fun and everything. Yeah.
Do you think it's that ability to actually hit and let out some of that aggression is why you've seen more and more injured vets take to the sport?
Yeah. Hold on, I just cut off. But I got your question. Sorry, I think we're back. Yeah. Resuming back. Okay. Yeah, I think, you know, to me, I can't speak for everybody, but at least for myself, you know, even though I was playing in a goaltending position, I felt like there was a way to kind of outlet for me to kind of let out whatever that I couldn't express. Maybe sometimes you're going to have good days and bad days while you're rehabbing, right? Or even when you went back with your significant others or your spouses. And I think different things, you know, and I think just the ice would just have that outlet because also it was also hockey, right? But, it, you know, but you couldn't do that if it was like wheelchair basketball. People would look at you crazy or sitting volleyball, you know, or, you know, things like that. But I think hockey was just such a sense that, like, it definitely for me to do that. And then people would just be like, oh, that's just him lashing out. And it just, it's okay in a way. But I believe, you know, like I said, I can't speak for everybody, but definitely for sure for myself, that definitely was one of the reasons for me to stay around, you know?
Yeah, no, and I can see it. Cause like you said, you know, when you're going through any sort of injury, there's that anger that, you know, as you're trying to figure things out, it's like, I know I should be able to do this. My mind's telling me I can do it, but my body's not. And so you get that pent up anger and you don't want to take it out on those that are helping you or loving you. And, you know, hockey gives you that chance to do it in a controlled environment. And like you said, nobody look at you like, ooh, you need to take it easy there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's true even for, you know, us. I don't like the term able-bodied, you know, hockey players, but I mean, there's a reason we like to play that game once a week, you know, it calms us down.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I definitely has like done drop in for, you know, able-bodied goal, you know, just, you know, being in front of the net and then like, you know, stopping pucks at the able-bodied, like stick and puck or dropping hockey, you know,
yeah.
And like, especially here, like on a Wednesday, sometimes they have like 10 a.m. like drop in like a morning and I just go. You get a good 4-on-4, 5-on-5, and these like firefighters, you know, like, you know, they would play, you know,
yeah,
and all these things, and and then get into one of the guys that's like maybe have skated juniors, and everybody played junior somewhere, and then like,
yeah,
things, you know, dropping gloves, you know, they're fighting. I'm like, oh my god, like it's 10 a.m. gentlemen's Wednesday, you know.
Yeah, it's stick and puck, fellas, calm down.
Stick and puck, yeah.
You know, there's always that one guy in the beer league that wants to start fights and everything, and whenever he tries you know, starting stuff in our league, you know, you just hear from both benches like, we all have to work in the morning, what are you doing?
Yeah, right? You know, and I'm thinking, like, you know, some of the guys, like, one fight I saw, a guy got like a bruise. I'm sure he broke his hand because he was punched. He's like, he thought he was still in the AHL, or thinking he was watching too much of that, and then punching a guy with the helmet on still. I'm like, that's just totally unnecessary, but, you know, like,
yeah,
it helps. If it helps, it helps. But,
yep, exactly. So, you know, let's get back to the equipment you have. Because for the most part, it is, you know, what I would wear on the ice is kind of what you have. You know, you've got the chest protector, you have the gloves. Do you have any modifications to your gloves? I ask because I know some of the players kind of have some extra grips on their gloves at times. You know, what about you as a goalie? Do you have anything extra, especially on, you know, kind of the underside that where I wouldn't have it, but do you, because you kind of have to go, you know, a little different to stop those high shots than I do.
Yeah, Joe, like for me, it's, believe it or not, like I'm not a crazy high maintenance guy as far as like little stuff to add on, and maybe I should, maybe that will help me like make more, I don't know, you know, like start a couple more games. But it's just like for me, it's the basic modification for it is there, right? For sled goaltenders, you know, for us, like we gotta put spikes on our glove side where it's gonna be you know, on the hand side of it where you can put it down and still maneuver or move side to side or forward and back as a skating procedure. And, you know, blocker, I have seen teammates and where I've done it before where you can put spikes around the knuckle area inside that blocker, you know, where it can help you do a maybe extra grip if you want to on the ice. If you like kind of lay flat down already and you need to kind of just have a like a power push slide. So I've seen that before.
Yeah.
I have seen different modification as far as like different sticks. How do you like your sticks? Some people like it the almost like the regular goaltending sticks, right? But it's cut down shorter for their length and whatnot.
Yeah.
For me, mine looks almost like a tomahawk stick, right? I think you've seen that if you look at the picture, right? But it's not directly straight or flat. It's going to be a little bit at like a 45-degree angle and whatnot, just to have that angle and then for me to cover the blocker side a little bit better. But I definitely don't have like the extra padding or all these things. And sometimes I don't think about it. And then until I get hit there, I'm like, I think I should put something there. You know?
Yeah. Well, that was me in college. I started wearing a slash guard on my glove hand, but I turned it around because harder shots and everything else. And I kept getting bruises right here. Just went and got a, you know, slash guards that normally you have the plastic up here. I just turned it around and like, boom. And it was funny because never really heard other goalies doing that. But, you know, as I started being around more high level goalies, I started seeing more and more of them with that slash guard just on the glove hand. It's like one of those things none of us really talked about. We all just kind of did on our own.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a very creative way to go too.
Tendy Talk listeners, lately I've been listening to a lot of hockey podcasts, and it's been great. One reason it's been great to listen to? Because I use my Raycon wireless earbuds to do it. Raycon's everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. With optimized gel tips for the perfect in-ear fit, these earbuds are so comfortable, and they will not budge. Trust me. Raycons give 8 hours of playtime and a 32-hour battery life. Raycons are priced just right. You get quality audio at half the price of other premium audio brands. It's no wonder Raycons everyday earbuds have over 50,000 five-star reviews. Of the things people point out in their reviews, the 3 customizable sound profiles, noise isolation, and awareness mode. I use my earbuds when I'm mowing the lawn each week. I can't hear the mower, but I can hear the podcasts. Go to buyraycon.com/THPN today to get 15% off your Raycon order. That's buyraycon.com/THPN to score 15% off. Buyraycon.com/THPN.
Yeah. So, you know, you start playing sled hockey as part of your rehab. But next thing you know, you're pulling on the USA sweater and you're representing our country at the Olympics. How did that happen?
Yeah, totally. That definitely wasn't part of the plan, right? You know, like, no one says, like, especially for people who enlisted or served, you know, like, put their right hand up, like, hey, you know, I'm going to defend my country. Also, maybe if it doesn't pan out, I'll be in the Paralympics, right? So those things were definitely one – I would say just one journey, one chapter at a time, you know? I think the most important for me at that time was just to like, hey, find an outlet, find a therapeutic reason for it. And I fell in love with the sport. Then afterwards was not just about playing for fun and playing competitively along with other guys that really wants to take this game at the next level. So like guys, again, mentioned like Rico Roman, you know, Joshua Sweeney, Luke McDermott, you know, Josh Hargis, like a lot of those guys that play at one of, you know, Chris Leverkun too, they want to play, you know, they want to win. And I think that was the biggest thing is that we all have this competitive edge to want to win and want to be better. So like, it wasn't just about hitting anymore. It wasn't just like getting on the ice and know how to shoot with the one hand. It was about learning the concept of the game. And then from that, after we kind of established a little bit of that, and then our coach, Lonnie Hanna, at that time, he was already on the national team, but he does come back and coach us on his own time, right? And that's when he was just like, man, like, there's a good shot, like, three or four of you should go try out and then try out for the team. Just never know. And that was the thing. It's just like, hey, you know, you got nothing to lose. The national team just got back from a 2010 Olympic Games, Paralympic Games at that time. It was a off year. It was going to be an off following season and whatnot. And so I won a trial, and then little did I know they picked me up to be one of the goalies, you know, and had no idea where that's going to take off. And then, bam.
Yeah, and, you know, so you make the team, you get to go to some cool countries. What was that Olympic experience like for you? You get to walk into the stadium for the ceremony, what do they call it, the Parade of Nations. You get to, you know, be there with these elite Paralympians.
Yeah, it was definitely a surreal experience, that's for sure. Something that was like, everything was happening so fast, right? Like prior to that, then you mentioned we were able to travel different countries. So like for the first time, like, not only I'm representing something that's really important, right, which is our nation, our country, yeah, but we get sent to these other countries. We go play in Canada, right? And then Canada, they take their hockey very seriously up there, you know? So sled hockey was no different. You know, yeah, like whenever it's us against Canada and one of these like local, international, not a world championship, or not a Paralympic, but like international matches, and it's playing for the goal, it's playing for the first place, right? Black and rice, however you want to call it. They put it on TSN, you know, they put our, yeah, our game on TSN, we're everywhere, and bam, next thing you know, like, I'm walking in the opening ceremony in Russia, in Sochi, along with the teammates that I rehab with and try out and make the team, along with my, 16 other teammates on the USA team, and then on the bigger platform, now you're talking about other athletes all as well. So it was just definitely something that, like, you know, you just felt like, wow, like, you know, you have something and you went for it, and then but you know, like, what it takes to get there, you know?
Right. You no. That's awesome. And not only that, but you've come home with some gold medals. So that's got to feel pretty good too. So the question is, where do you keep the gold medals?
Yeah. No, I'm pretty chillax about it. Maybe I shouldn't be, cause it has gotten stolen already once.
But, yeah.
But normally it's like a computer drawer. I have like a little display. It's like right there. And then, because just in case people do ask, and then throughout the years, I really thought, oh, maybe it dies down. People won't ask for the medal, but no, there's always something that, hey, bring your medal, the display, showcase it. So I just have it right there as a reach. You know,
I've heard of so many Olympians who've won a medal and they keep it in a sock for some reason. It's just, they're always like, oh, it's in a sock in my sock drawer. Yeah. It's like, okay, so if I were to ever win an Olympic medal, I better get myself a fancy sock for it, you know?
I definitely put it somewhere in a cloth. I think sock, I definitely have tried that in the once before too, like something a fancy sock. Yeah.
Yeah. You alluded to it. I mean, you made national news when somebody broke into your car to steal your backpack that happened to have your medals in there.
Yeah.
When you came back to your car and saw that the backpack was gone, I mean, what were you thinking? Like,
oh, I definitely, my heart sank, or whatever you would call it, stomach dropped. I don't know what the right terminology of it was, but like, first thing I noticed once I was walking back toward my car, and, I drive a Tesla, so I get a notification, right? Like they're so high tech. So part of even getting to the garage or getting to my car, we got a notification saying, hey, your alarm has been going off for the last 5 minutes and, you know, all these things. And I'm just thinking, oh, maybe it's just someone bump into it or whatever. But when I saw the car and then walked approach on my door side, the driver's side, and saw the window shattered behind the driver's side, which is the passenger seat, and I kind of was like sensing, like, oh my gosh, like, I really hope it's not the bag with the medals in it. And sure, you know, sure enough, it was. And I think that time it was just like one of those, like, you know, you feel a little bit stupid for what happened, but at the same time, it's almost like, gosh, you know, like, what are the odds that it happened? What are the odds that, like, yeah, all the vehicles that yours gets broken into? And for me, it's just like, it wasn't just really kind of nonchalant about, like, I have like, my car windows are tinted. You know, I have the car for a couple years now, and I actually even put the, because the windshield is pretty big on the Model 3. So I have the windshield sunblock too. So you can't really see what's in there, you know? So
right.
One of those things is crazy. It was, I guess, just like a lucky snatch and grab by this guy. I don't know, you know?
Well, and how fortunate that you did have a Tesla that, because of the technology, the right. cameras on the mirror
yes.
recorded this guy breaking into your car, and it got such a good picture of him.
Oh my
they
God.
Were able to catch him and find your medals.
Yeah, totally. Because I'm not kidding. Like, the couple of days prior, earlier that week, I noticed my storage space. Because for the Tesla, like, to record all these things, like the yeah. action footage, like, you got to have a memory space. So I have, like, a thumb drive in there. And it was almost full. So I actually took the time out, because you got to take it out of the car. You got to put it on the computer. It's a pain in the neck, it can be. And I cleared it, you know. And luckily I did that, and they were able to capture it, able to catch the guy, you know, right there, you know, with the face
yeah.
kind of recognition, all that good thing. So next thing I know, I was just kind of telling my friends and everyone in San Antonio what I can do. And they were like, you got to put this on social media and put it on
yeah.
the outlet. On the news outlet, and then let it go viral, because it's not just a regular thing that I got broke into. It's your medals, Jen. It's your medals.
yeah. yeah. And fortunately, they were able to find them. Where did they turn up? You know, did the guy try taking them to a pawn shop? Well, you know, where did they find them?
Yeah. So it was crazy. So, like, you know, when it happened, the thing went viral, and it got retweeted and everything else, right? So everybody started getting involved. And next thing you know, like, the San Antonio Police Department, the sheriff, the U.S. Marshal, and I even heard about maybe like possibly FBI, you might as well call the National Guard, you know, I don't know. They all got involved. The chief of police, Chief McMahon was like, no, this is unacceptable. And then, you know, he was using like the camera technology and the city that they installed for like facial recognition. And I guess it got to the point where it got really heated. You know, this became a very trending topic. And the guy, they found the backpack first. It was dumped somewhere in the parking lot and by the theater where I parked. And mm-hmm. they found the backpack. The wife and the husband called it in and said, hey, we have a backpack. But then realized this empty backpack is where the scene was. So that was like, oh, shoot, you know, we're getting close. You know, that was like day two. And then and then 3 days later, they say, hey, they got a notification. They called me. 2 days later, actually, they were like, hey, we found the bag that has contains your medals in it. And I was like, oh, where was it? And it was like, oh, it was dropped off with a note at a fire station. Yeah. So I guess the guy realized, oh my God, he has messed up, or he was like, oh gosh, it's too much. So he
decided
to give it back, you know, and then left a note says, I think I messed up or something like that, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. So, knowing that, I mean, do you have a message for him and his, I doubt he's listening to the podcast, but, you know, if you were able to talk to him, you know, what would you say to him?
Yeah. I mean, I think they asked me this too prior, you know, when the news outlet media was asking, you know, we're doing an interview and they try to get their story. We're trying to get my story. I'm sorry. And I just say, hey, I just want my backpack. I mean, I don't care about the backpack. You can keep whatever it is in there. I think there was a book in there. It was a, you know, iPod or all these things. But I was like, I just want the medals, you know. And I understand, like, the time was tough or what was going on, you know. And mm-hmm. everyone has different ways to make their, you know, ends meet and whatnot. But, you know, the medals definitely worth is more than just what it is, right? It's memories. It's all the things that we kind of, has trained for, has fight for, has, you know, all these things. So I didn't care about the rest of all these things. And in a way, I'm just very fortunate to get it back, you know?
Yeah, no, it's, and I mean,
but sorry, the microphone again. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
On my microphone, it keeps popping out, and
there we are. Yeah.
But how fortunate that you just happened to be driving a Tesla and not a Honda or a Ford that wouldn't record this. You know,
I think these are type of like these type of energy and all these things, right? I think more and more I play the position, the goaltending position. The more you understand, like, sometimes it's not about you know, goaltending is not just about like what you do on the ice and what works for you to, and then like what you learn from like the coaching of it or the aspect of the game. Sometimes it has a lot of more of a spiritual involved as in your game as well, where it may help you grow or understand the game concept better in a different way, or then it makes you maybe see the game better in different ways, you know? And yeah. I think that time it just make, I wouldn't say, oh, it makes sense, but it's just like, oh man, like these things happen for a reason where a lot of people may not understand it, but like for me, like I understood why, you know, and I'm just glad that it worked out in a way in my favor, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's one of those things, you know, there's those times where you just go, things happened for a reason. And you don't question them. It reminds me when I was in college, I went to Catholic school my whole life, and very much like the scene from the movie Rudy, where he's in the church and the priest goes, there's two things I'm certain of in life. There is a God and I'm not him. And I had a similar situation when I was in college. One of the brothers was talking to me. He goes, you know, you got to look up at the night sky and then tell me there's not a God. You know, because it's one of those things where there's a greater power just making sure things work out in some crazy way.
Yeah. You know, it really is. It goes back to like, how did, you know, I even end up playing hockey again, or, you know, or in the position. And then there's the story behind of like, it wasn't just bread and butter the whole way to making, you know, like making the Sochi team, the roster, and then afterwards making it for the Pyeongchang 2018, and then this whole thing about how I became a starter in 2022, you know. So it's like a way of different ways of like everything happens for a reason, but a lot of those things sometimes are we call it failures or mm-hmm. challenges, and that kind of can bring you down for a while, but you have to learn how to kind of overcome it. And it's just almost like getting scored on, right? And in a big game or things like that, and how do you move forward? Or even playing didn't happen to win the game, and you know, based on your mistakes and how you ever overcome that and bounce back the next day, you know?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned, you know, it's failures and how you move forward. I think I was listening to the In Goal podcast, and they were talking about Mitch Korn evaluating a young goalie. Mm-hmm. And this goalie just had a terrible game. And Mitch said something along the lines of, you know, I learned more about that goalie and the way he persevered through that bad game than if he would have had a good game. You learn more about people in their downtime than you do their good time. So there's a lot to that. Yeah. Now, I'm looking at the time. We've been talking a while, so I want to be mindful of that. Oh. I end every episode with a list of 10 questions. I've stopped calling them rapid fire questions because they tend to lead to more fun stories. But they're the same questions I've asked every single goalie, from the Bantam goalie all the way up to Stanley Cup Hall of Fame goalies. Sure. So it's fun to see how they go. And the first one is, what's the craziest coaching moment from your playing days where a coach just lost it?
Wow. I think for me, it's when, I think it's like earlier in the years in the season. When I was playing like my first, second year on the team. And then we had, you know, we had different head coaches changes, but at that time we were playing under coach, Ray Maluda. And, you know, he's a little bit more, he played in the former, pro league in the past. So he just has that expiring the trend, you know, and I never really mm-hmm. kind of like deal with that as far as like that kind of explosiveness goes, you know, especially in the hockey realm. So I think it's like one of those, like we had a pretty okay game, and then like the next practice, the next morning went to practice, and then like it just, it wasn't like exactly how you wanted, how the coaching staff wanted, and he just lost it and backskating up. Like, I was just like, wow, this is my first time experiencing that, you know, like everyone was like, oh, you know, this is crazy crap and all these things. I'm just like, wow, this is pretty cool, you know.
Yeah. that's funny. So yeah. What is your favorite all-time goalie mask?
Are you talking about more like the NHL guys or any mask, or at this
any
point,
mask
any mask, man? I mean, like how I even drew into the playing goalie in the position is really like, it was like Dominic Hasso, Chris Oscar. It's like where they're just their cage was just different, you know, compared to others, you know, and then like that itself just stood out. It wasn't like the painting or the picture or the graphics. It was like that way it just looked different. And then they play like, you know, they were pretty much, you know, on the ice, you know what I'm saying? Like, so they're at a different level too. So, I think those are the masks that really stood out to me, at least that got me into wanting to play in goalie as well.
Yeah, and I like that you mentioned Osgood. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. I'm a Blackhawks fan saying that. He belongs in the Hall of Fame, and people that try and say, well, look at the teams in front of him. I hate that explanation because hardly ever does a great team with an okay goaltender win the Stanley Cup. It's happened, like, this year, it happened. The Hawks in 2010 with Antti Niemi, it happened, but you need a good goaltender, and that's why I fear, you know, Osgood's not in there. You got a guy like Corey Crawford who probably won't make it in the Hall of Fame, even though he's got almost identical numbers to Henrik Lundqvist, who will probably be a first ballot Hall of Famer. It's like, Osgood, he belongs in there.
Yeah, and it's crazy how you mentioned that because, like, we do talk about that stuff, but, like, people take that as, like, like, you know, the goaltender absolutely did not do anything, or you know what I mean? Yeah. Or the time that preseason started to, like, all the way to the, you know, midseason, and then, like, through, you know, like, different, you know, there's going to be teams that, hey, they had their ups and downs or injuries in the battle.
Right.
He stepped up and played that, and then to help, you know, keep in the first place or in the playoffs, all these things, you know, punch the card to, you know, so, you know, I feel like it's, so totally unfair to do that sometimes that we get that.
It is. And at the same time, some of these great teams are great because of that goalie. You hear it all the time about Grant Fuhr and how the Oilers knew that they could let in 5 or 6 goals. You know, they didn't care because they knew Grant was going to stop the ones they needed when it mattered. And he did. And that allowed them to play a looser style of game. But if they didn't trust their goalie, if they didn't think he was good enough, they wouldn't have played that loose, open style game that allowed him to score all those goals. And that's where the good goalies make that difference, is they allow those teams to take those chances to play a riskier game because they know if they cough the puck over and there's a turnover or an odd man rush, they're good back there.
Yeah,
it makes a big difference. When I was coaching high school hockey, we saw it all the time. There's, you know, one or two kids when we had to give them their few starts a year, we played different. We played a much more defensive game because of that. But when we put our number one goalie in, it was a completely different game. The guys had confidence, so they tried those stretch passes. They tried those dangles, and, you know, because they knew if it didn't work out, they had them behind you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So next question, what's your favorite rink that you've played at?
Favorite rink? Wow. I would say got the chance to play a lot of different rink sizes, you know? So I would, like, if you want to start like the world championship first or whatnot, like at that level first, I would say Czech Republic. I think in Ostrava, you know, prior to the COVID, they held like the world championship there. And, oh my gosh, it was just loud. It was just loud, and they love their hockey. And you know, they had fireworks. They had ice girls, and I was like, "This is crazy!" And a sled hockey game, and it's just like nuts, you know. and then you have Russia in Sochi when we're playing, you know, in that Paralympic and the Olympic size rinks. You have like, you know, we're playing gold medal against Russia, so it's like Russia versus U.S. again, and then you know, you had like President Putin that was watching the game, and you know, it was just like a different sense. And then you're looking at North America, Canada. I would say like Calgary and like Nova Scotia. Like, they, you know, every time you go up there and play, you definitely have like really good crowds and everything else.
That's awesome. And to play in Russia with Putin in the house had to have been quite an experience.
It was nuts. It was nuts that you can see them like right there at the suite level, and they're just looking on, you know, like.
And to win the game and probably just see his anger in his eyes had to make it even better, kind of, the, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I, it's, you know, I don't want to, I mean, it's a whole story. You can do a whole podcast about that, right? You know, you have to, there's like a documentary came out. It's called like Incurious or Incurious about what happened in Sochi or like about athletes.
Yep.
And then, yeah, there's like, and then supposedly we, the head coach of the Russian team that time, I don't, or some, one of the coaching staff like disappeared within, you know, after the Sochi loss. And we're just like, you know what I mean? You kind of question like what happened. And
yeah.
Yeah. Different things. Yeah.
So this is a question that I'm really interested to hear your response because you do play sled hockey. What's your favorite stick that you've ever used?
Favorite stick? Wow. Yeah. We don't get that much like, you know, all our sticks are like handmade. We made it ourselves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we actually make our sticks from scratch. So if you want to say what was the best stick I ever made, I think it was my boy who was a combat engineer, Sean Semesky. He had his crazy MacGyver engineering and about like how to reinforce my hockey sticks stronger because it just kept getting broken. I was just like, hey, man, like every camp or every like, you know, two camps that will break a bunch of sticks. And he was like, that's it. We're going to try to figure this out. And and he came out with this concept. He was like, it's still going to be light. We're going to only add just a little bit of like ounces of weight, but nothing too crazy. And I think that's pretty much my answer.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You're starting to see more of the manufacturers though focus a little bit on at least the player sticks for sled hockey.
Yeah.
Shops, some of the blades, you know, at first I was like, what kind of goofy blade is this? Then it dawned on me. He's like, oh, these are sled hockey blades.
Yeah. I would say as a regular players, like not non goaltenders, like their sticks has evolved or has, you know, changed a lot, quite a bit from, used to be wooden sticks, right? Now you have like the carbon fiber, the composite and all like the more hollow and got a little bit more angles in the bend of it.
Yeah.
As well. I think Warriors, Easton used to pick it up, but I think now Warriors like the main company that makes the sticks. And I'm not kidding. Yeah. Like, some of these guys, some of our top guys, Jack Wallace, Brody, you know, like they use these, you know, these high caliber sticks that, you know, does make a difference in their shots and how the pucks come out. Yeah. How it gets released.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So because you got your start playing roller hockey, I think this question still pertains. What's your favorite youth hockey memory?
Wow. Yeah. My favorite youth hockey memory was we had the park and rec like a bash, you know, where the seventh, eighth grader, wanted to puff your chest. It's like, hey, we're better than like this, like these PE teacher, like go, you know, and then there were like a bunch of staff members, like PE staff, a volunteer staff that plays hockey, like adult. So like we had like a little battle, you know, and like, but at the end of the day, like, they asked me to go 10, and you know, for both sides, they were like, hey, we're going to have one game. We're going to want Lee to play for us and then Lee play for us. And then it makes a difference. You know, they were trying to say, oh, goalie makes a difference. Yeah. And then like, it went to like game five, you know, like a little series we had. And it's supposed to be like as simple as like maybe one or two games, but it was just like, oh, awesome. I'll win one for them. I'll lose one. I'm like, hey, but it's tight. Knit games, yeah.
Yeah. So what is the best chirp you've heard on the ice, off the ice, directed at you, not directed at you? I'm assuming there's probably been some good ones.
Oh, man. I mean, I think those things are like the chirp I got from it, it's really – I don't know. I normally try to like face them out, so I'm trying to remember like what they say, but I think it's just like, oh, I think the best one was like, you know – my first 10 seasons, you know, I'm not going to lie, like, I don't even play much, you know, I had, like, you know, Steve Cash were, you know, considered as one of the best goalie, you know, what he does in front of the net, and so whenever I actually get the time to play or chance to play in front of, like, a higher or better team, like Canada or Russia and all these things, and then you see some of the guys, like, oh, they finally put you in, huh, you know, like, oh, it's going to be it's going to be like a Swiss cheese, you know, it's going to be like a Christmas lights all day, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And I kind of just chuckle. I'm like, yep, here I am, you know, so here we go. Yeah.
Well, and to get politically incorrect, when you have a bunch of people with disabilities together, they get vicious with each other about each other's disability, where if anybody without a disability could said this, we would be canceled in a heartbeat. But I've noticed when I've been around some people with disabilities, they are ruthless with each other. But it's one of those. They can say it, we can't.
Yeah, there's definitely no holds bar in our hockey community or hockey world as well. You know.
Yeah. So, what is the worst post game beer you've had?
What's the worst? Again, sorry.
Worst post game beer.
Oh man, worst post game beer. I would hate to say it, but like it's not. Like I go up there a lot, and I will say it's an all right city, in Rochester, New York. You know, I'm not gonna say which bar, but I had like sometimes it was just like one time I had like a beer there, but it was just flat. That was it. And I was just like, you know, and we just lost. Beer tastes like crap. I was just like, yeah, you know, we're here. Flat, this is the reason why we're here.
Flat beer will ruin it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I don't even know if this one might pertain to you because you do have kind of that Franken stick going on. But when you tape your stick, do you go heel to toe or toe to heel?
Ooh, definitely heel to toe. Yeah.
Okay. You are in the majority there. Okay. So when you play, what's your favorite number to wear and why?
My favorite number is 32 because that was like my high school. My high school number was between 32 and 34. But 34 was Stevie, so 32 was like the next number. They gave me like number one. Oh, that's the worst. That's like a bad omen number. I don't like that.
Yeah, I'm with you. The few times I've had to wear number one, it's like I don't feel like I've got anything on my back. I got to feel like I have a number, so I feel like I'm part of the team. And number one, it's just you don't feel.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't feel I feel like it's very, very individual. It's not only just an odd number, a single number, but it's like you just feel like you got it. It's like, I couldn't do that.
No. Yeah, no, absolutely. And the last question, what advice do you have for young goalies?
Yeah, I would say young goaltenders, you know, if you're at a point in take where you feel comfortable, great, you know, it's always good to feel comfortable, but there's going to be a lot of uncomfortable or a lot of different things still going to thrown at you no matter what level or where you play, right? You can be at a younger goaltending level but play at a high caliber school, academy and whatnot, or maybe a little bit down in a different state or city where the hockey is not that great, but you're like the best goalie out there, you know? So yeah. I think the biggest words of advice is try to prepare for a lot of different uncomfortable scenarios ahead of you.
Well, and I think that's just good advice for life too, because, you know, we all like to think life is could be nice and comfortable and happy, but it's not all roses and sunshine.
Right. Right.
You know,
totally.
So where can folks follow you on social media if they want to and follow your journey?
Yeah, it's not much, you know, but it's something that we got. For me, it's the IG, Instagram. It's at Horatius, @HORAY_Shus. And then, you have Facebook as well, Horatius Jin Lee, Twitter. It's like live of LAW, Lone Wolf. So silly. And then, and then that's just kind of like, a way to kind of really get connected and stay connected with everyone who's, has been following our team, has been following our journey and everything else. And I really appreciate for everyone who's been a fan or continue to be a fan and new fans as well to come.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to chat with me and be a part of the podcast. It's been fun getting to know you a little bit. And I tell every guest this, if life brings you through the Twin Cities, let me know. We'll get a beer together.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely used to go up there quite often, you know, so love to get back to Minnesota. Definitely hit you up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the show.
What a cool conversation that was with Jen. I know without a doubt that I could not play goal to the level that he does if I were in the same situation. I have a hard enough time as it is staying on my own 2 feet.
Can you imagine having to stop pucks while on a sled? I sure can't. Be sure to follow Jen on Instagram at HORAY_SHUS and on Twitter at LifeOfALW. I'm going to try something new for some of my upcoming episodes and broadcast them live on YouTube. So keep an eye out on YouTube to see if you can catch the actual recordings. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube simply by searching for Wash Up Goalie and I'll pop up. Visit washupgoalie.com for some great hockey-related content, my Beer League hockey video highlights, which should be starting up again here pretty soon, and of course, all podcast episodes. If you want some Wash Up Goalie or Tendy Talk apparel, be sure to visit my Threadless shop by clicking the merchandise link on the website. If you like this podcast, go listen to the BLPA Big Show. It's the OG BLPA Podcast Network show where a couple of Beer League players talk Beer League hockey, draft experience shenanigans, and exploits from around the game. Be sure to check out the full lineup of hockey-related podcasts on the Hockey Podcast Network as well. There are too many lists here, but shows like the Pucks in Deep podcast, the Dump and Change podcast, and the World Hockey Report podcast can all be found. If you're looking for something good to read, get yourself a subscription to the Vintage Tendy magazine. Published quarterly, the magazine takes a deep dive into an 80s and 90s era goalie. In the first five issues, they've covered Felix Potvin, Grant Fuhr, Tim Cheveldae, Jocelyn Thibault, Ken Reggett, John Van Beesbrook, and episode 20 guest, mask painter Don Strauss. I need to thank the band The Zambonis for allowing me to use their music on my episodes. You can download their music on iTunes or listen wherever you stream music from. And as always, I'm working on lining up other goalies to talk to. If you are a goalie or have connections to a goalie who I should talk to, shoot me an email at washupgoalie39@gmail.com or send me a DM on social media. Let's not forget, if you're a brand new one to sponsor the show, be sure to reach out to me. I'd be happy to talk. And finally, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment on the podcast platform you're listening on. It's a quick action on your part that helps others find Tendy Talk. So, until next time, keep your stick on the ice and your body square to the puck.
Right over.
All right, let's go.
Get the net.